Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome in. This is WEEI Afternoons here on a Friday, just after 2 o'clock on December the 27th, 2024. Thanks so much for being with us and hopefully starting your weekend off a little bit earlier with us. But we appreciate you being here on this Friday. We are in for Christian Arkin and Andy Hart here on WEEI Afternoons. I'm Dan Ball. Joe Weil returns for his second day on the program. Joe, good afternoon. How are you?
We're back, baby. We're back.
That's right.
Pumped to be back with you, Dan, and close out the week strong.
It's great to have you back here in the now in the three chair, as we actually have three people now in studio, as we're joined today by our good friend Tom Carroll. Tom, I've said this pretty much all week to anybody I've worked with. It's nice to meet you, and good afternoon. How are you?
It's nice to meet you too, man. Yeah, it's great to be here and be in studio with you guys, and let's do 3 hours of radio. I'll only be here for 3 hours.
Gotcha.
You guys will be here for 4 hours.
I was going to say, I did not realize that my schedule was only at the 3 hour mark. I would have taken it if we had it, but you'd sit in a bumper to bumper traffic, whether it was three or four. So I guess that really doesn't matter. But we talked about this a little bit before we jump into everything. Loaded show here on this Friday. Tom, how was your holiday, man?
It was great. It was great. Low key.
Yeah.
There's no little kids in the mix. It's all adult children.
Oh, sure.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We were at my parents' house, low key. We had the family over on Christmas morning, did brunch, watched sports. It's easy now, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Once kids are in the mix, that's when it gets complicated.
Right.
But, you know, my wife and I don't have kids yet. My brother doesn't have kids. My younger sister doesn't have kids. So it's just
easy. Oh, you're in the sweet spot.
Yeah, we're in the great zone here. People are just getting each other gift cards, relaxing. Like, you don't have to get up super early.
Yeah.
It's great. So
that is great.
Nice, relaxing week.
So the one question I have on the topic of Christmas, because we spent a couple segments talking about this yesterday. What was on your television? Were you team NFL on Christmas Day or team NBA on Christmas Day, or maybe a little bit of both?
I was locked into NFL.
You were?
Yeah,
okay.
I was really interested to see how Netflix would do.
Yeah.
So that part of it, being like the media nerd that I am, I just wanted to see kind of how they operated the broadcast. I was almost like waiting on pins and needles to see that buffering sign
yeah.
come up.
The Tyson Paul buffering.
Which, that, right. Yeah.
Which happened at the beginning, right? Because I missed that when I tuned in. There were some issues,
I think,
in the beginning with either it was audio or some buffering stuff. But I had heard that was where the issue was.
Interesting. Okay, so I never got it. And I did see some friends kind of complaining about it, but I just blamed their Wi-Fi. I'm like, look, that's why I pay for the good Wi-Fi. So,
I mean, by and large, it seemed like the reviews in terms of just the technical aspect were actually pretty strong. I was reading an awful announcing article about it, and it seemed like
for the most part, with some exceptions, that people were pretty okay with how it was executed.
Of all of the NFL streamers there has been in recent years, I think that was the best product that I've seen.
Yeah.
And the camera quality was incredible. And I don't know if that was a product of like the cameras they were using or how they were sending it over the air, but it looked great.
Yeah.
And technically it worked perfectly. Their talent was good. I mean, I could do without Manti Te'o, but for the most part, I didn't think he was great.
Oh, okay. All right.
The turtleneck bothered me. Don't wear a turtleneck when you're in studio.
Why?
I'm anti-turtleneck.
Okay.
Just wear a suit or dress casual. The turtleneck bothers me.
Oh, well, then you must have hated the Thursday Night Football broadcast yesterday, because I'm pretty sure they were 5 for 5 in turtlenecks and then like a coat over the top of it of some kind.
You're trying too hard.
Yeah.
Just wear a suit. There's a reason why people have been wearing suits on television for 90 years.
Yeah, that's
because
true.
It looks good.
And Dan, we were talking about the games yesterday, and one thing we were talking about was just like the quality of games for the NFL. Thursday Night Football last night, that was awful.
Oh,
awful,
man. Awful. Yeah. I went to meet a couple of friends who are back in town from college. Now, being a Mass native, I can do fun things like that and meet the people who live in the Boston area on a Thursday. And we were watching the game, and it just became bad. I mean, we were watching the second and third rate bowl games and just kind of loosely paying attention to Thursday Night Football, because it was a disaster. And then they came back from commercial and they showed that it was starting to precipitate. I think it was some mixed rain, snow, sleet, whatever.
It looked bad.
And there was just, between the couple of us, it was just this is about to get worse. And it already sucks to begin with. So, yeah, for all the good grace that they built up on Wednesday with their games, yesterday flushed that right down the toilet.
And I'm thankful that I'm not in any fantasy championships. Okay, I'm not thankful. I wish I was. And
I'm
frustrated about it still. But
Thank God I suck, man.
If I was in a fantasy championship and watching that game and had Jaxon Smith-Njigba or like a DJ Moore, I would have been so frustrated watching that thing.
So I am in the finals for one league, and I'm also in the loser's bracket final for another league. So the duality of man here. The team I actually care about is horrible.
Okay.
The team that I don't really care about, I could possibly win like $700 if things shake my way over the next few days here. So I was happy to see that the game stunk last night.
Right.
Because DK Metcalf had a light night, and that was good for me. But no one wants to hear about other people's fantasy teams, so I apologize.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And again, that's Tom Carroll. If you see him out at a bar or a restaurant, apparently he's picking up your tab if he wins this week.
Absolutely not.
You can join the conversation at any point. You can call us 617-779-7937. That's also the number you can text us at. You can, obviously, if you join us on the air, we appreciate that. You can join in on the video streams on YouTube and on Twitch as well. Plenty to get to here. Rumors floating around about the Red Sox. More updates on Alex Bregman. A bizarre rumor about Tristan Casas that also involves Masataka Yoshida, plus Celtics back in action, Bruins back in action, and a whole slate of games in the NFL. But we begin today on this program with a report from Josina Anderson, who, if you gave me 1,000,001 guesses, I would not have told you that she was writing or covering anything for Bovada.
So strange.
But apparently she is, and it broke down the latest and greatest with the Patriots and Gerard Mayo. To read right from the top, the Patriots' assessment on head coach Gerard Mayo already includes broad evaluations of his coaching staff and how he can be better supported and support himself with potential modifications for next season. While there are sentiments in the building that certain groups have shown some signs of regression at times and frustrations are about consistency linger, there's also a desire to contextualize unit development against the reality of individual skill level available. We're using a lot of 5-cent words in the description of what she's trying to say, but what I glean from that and what I think that she was trying to convey in no uncertain terms and some very lengthy terms is there's a level of safety here with Gerard Mayo, and the Patriots are not at the point where they're evaluating, should this coach be our head coach? They're evaluating, what areas of weakness do we have around the head coach and around the coaching staff that we can focus on and improve on for next season? So there does seem to be some support and stability in New England right now.
Yeah, and you know, being down there every day, you get the sense that the players really care about Gerard Mayo and want to play for Gerard Mayo. So he has their back.
Yeah.
And I think if he lost the locker room, we'd be in an entirely different situation at 3 wins with 2 games left to go.
Yeah.
But the team is playing for him. Whether they're playing well is a different topic, but they support him. And the Crafts, they put a lot on the line to just give this guy this job 5 years ago. And obviously this wasn't the plan, right? Belichick was supposed to be here a couple more years. He was supposed to wean Mayo off the linebackers coach role into being like this head coach in waiting. And then the timeline got screwed up based on how last season went and how things have just completely gone haywire between Belichick and the Crafts. So the Crafts are in this interesting position where they have a guy who is underqualified for the job,
yeah,
by
no question,
any means.
Yeah.
And he has a bad roster. So I think the Crafts realize we need to give this guy more time and he needs to have a better roster for us to get a real assessment for who he is. Now, I think that there have been plenty of things you could point to in game that show you that he may never get to that level, but I understand giving him time. I think too many times in the NFL, coaches are one and done, or like one and a half and done.
Yeah.
It's really hard to do a complete turnaround. Like the Chargers are doing it right now with Harbaugh, but they had some pieces, right?
Right. No question.
So it's really interesting. And I think that Mayo's back regardless. I think if you're going to see any changes, it's going to be in his coaching staff. I think that's where they're going to look first. And I hope that Elliott Wolf does a better job this offseason because he's the guy I'm blaming most for what we see on the field right now.
Yeah, and I think that's where I land after just seeing the way this season has unfolded. You hit on a lot of good points, though, Tom, about the way that Jerod Mayo has coached this year. The in-game decisions, I think, have us at times scratching our heads, and it does show that he's a first-year head coach. I think at the same time, to me, he deserves another chance, at least one more year, because we knew going into the season how bad this roster was. And we thought it could actually be better before we started to see how the draft picks have played outside of Drake May. And that's been the most concerning thing. And to me, this draft, and I know we'll talk about it a little bit more, but this draft and the way it's executed from the Patriots side of things is so important. Because one, we obviously know how many holes they have to fill on this roster to get to the point where they're actually competitive, like close to 500-ish competitive, even though you can't really be, well, I guess you can't be 500 in the NFL these days, but you get my point.
Not at the end of the season.
Yeah. But I think that when it's all said and done, when you've committed, as Robert Kraft has, you've committed to a guy like Jerod Mayo, as Tom pointed out, so long ago that to give him this opportunity to bail on him in 1 year is not exactly the good look from his perspective, because then it's like, okay, why did you commit to this guy, you know, 5 years out
yeah.
as well?
What was wrong with your evaluation for a half decade?
That you saw the heir apparent to Bill Belichick and you see it for one single season and say, okay, I'm done. It's this tough situation that the Patriots have obviously put themselves in, because there are going to be good coaches out on the market. You know, whether it's Mike Vrabel, Ben Johnson, whatever, you know, the big names out there that could be available for this upcoming season when you have as good a player as Drake May can be. So I think when it's all said and done, he's going to stay. He probably should stay. But at the same time, it'd be nice to see them be competitive these next two games. And I don't see why they can't be competitive against this Chargers team at the very least that is well coached, but it's not like they're, you know, brimming with high-end talent
yeah.
outside of Justin Herbert and Ladd McConkey.
And they're banged up.
Yeah.
And that's a huge element to all this, as we'll break down the game later on in the show today. Top-down evaluations was where Josina Anderson started in her piece. Ultimately, evaluations will be made from the coordinators on down, and Mayo's own staff decisions will be folded into the big picture and the decisions ahead. Nonetheless, the big picture still is currently framing Mayo's tenure, as this is a comp that we've heard a couple times, as it did in Detroit after Dan Campbell's first season starting 3-13, and the reality that he's a coach hand-selected in advance by Kraft ownership to succeed Belichick. Well, some reported Mayo's seat was getting warmer prior to the start of the season's final three-game stretch, and that competitive results were needed over the span. League sources maintain a change at the helm would still be a shock, citing stuff on down the line. The Dan Campbell conversation, other than the roster and record, infuriates me. It does, because no matter what, if Dan Campbell was a winning or a losing coach, from day one when he stood up at that pulpit and he said the thing about biting kneecaps, and you realize that his energy was an 11 out of 10, that's not something that we've seen at any point from Gerard Mayo. I see very little comparison between the way that Dan Campbell came in and seemed to immediately install the culture in the way he wanted his teams to play. And now his teams play like dogs. They play hard. And there's a direct comparison between how I see Dan Campbell approach the game of football and how his rosters do. I understand that the record was poor, the roster was poor, and then it built up, it got better, and he kind of grew along with that group. When we look at the messaging that comes from Gerard Mayo, we look at the consistency that comes from his teams, I just don't see that comparison at all. It kind of bugs me when I see it, to be honest.
No, it makes sense. And the reason why you're getting that comp is because the Lions were bad, and
right.
then they were okay, and then they were good,
sure.
and now they're really good.
Yeah.
So people that want the Patriots to succeed soon are looking at that as sort of like the short-term fix, right? Like, oh, if Dan Campbell could be a former player that wasn't a head coach before, first-time head coach, come in and, you know, have this rise that they've had, why can't Mayo do that? And look, their game in Buffalo is a good sign, at least the first half in Buffalo. That's the type of game you want to see over these next 2 weeks.
Right.
And that's what those Lions that won three games were doing. Towards the end of that season, those Lions teams were playing really good football. They weren't closing games because they ultimately weren't that good of a team, but you were in a lot of games. So they need to have more of what happened in Buffalo happen against the Chargers and then against Buffalo in week 18. Now, granted, who knows who will be playing for Buffalo, but New England needs to play hard regardless.
Yeah.
If you can see that sort of upswing to end the season, I'm not there with you where I'm not going to completely close the door on the Dan Campbell comp.
Okay.
There's still time for Mayo to be in that light. He just needs his team to play hard down the stretch and then next year have that next jump forward. So I think it's too early to close the door on that comp.
All right, that's fair.
The only thing I'm going to say, because I know we have to head to a break in a little bit,
yeah.
the Dan Campbell thing.
It's okay, the boss isn't here today.
That's true. The only thing about the Dan Campbell part of the argument that I do disagree with you on, Dan, is that I do think winning changes everything in the way we perceive things.
Of course.
So, like, when Dan Campbell did have that press conference, yes, there was, like, there was some, I think, legion of people that were like, oh, I like the fire, but it was kind of clownish at first, and then they started winning, and it was working, and now it's changed the conversation. So I do think winning is part of what changes how people view them, and obviously Dan Campbell's done a phenomenal job. And I'm not sitting here and saying I think Gerard Mayo is going to be a great head coach. I don't know that, and what we've seen so far has not been great, but it's year one, and we'll see where this goes in year two, and hopefully he has a roster that's much better to work with.
617-779-7937 if you want to join the conversation about Gerard Mayo, his job safety, what you would do both at head coach and at coordinator for the Patriots, as that will continue to be a conversation until it's not as we get closer to the end of the season here in 2024. Plus, coming up next, some more surprising and bizarre comments coming from one Patriots player that we will break down, the latest on the Red Sox and Alex Bregman, and much more. We'll take a quick break, but before we do that, here's Joe Weil with what's trending. WEEI Afternoons here on this Friday. Thanks so much for being with us. Dan Ball, Tom Carroll, Joe Weil, all in for Christian Harkand and Andy Hart. Christian Hart. I know that Christian is off on Monday, but Andy and I believe Fitzy will be at Gillette for a Patriots Monday. So if you're looking forward to that, and when they catch up with Drake May and Jonathan Jones on Monday, the guys will be back with you on Monday as they'll be reacting to Patriots and Chargers on Saturday. It's kind of polite of the Patriots to get their game out of the way in the early slate on Saturday to clear the rest of the weekend. But as we've talked, we actually, and Joe, you were on the show yesterday, so a surprising amount of our conversations about the Patriots, especially with Patriots fans who called in, were positive yesterday.
Yeah, that was a shock.
There was positivity around Drake May. There was positivity around, hey, you. There was even positivity around Elliot Wolf. I didn't know that was physically possible
no way.
At this point.
I actually don't believe
they must have just had great holidays, like great Christmases.
Really, I'm going to have to go listen on the podcast because I actually don't believe you.
It was, hey, you got to be patient. Like, look at the Green Bay. Look at the Green Bay comp and what they were able to do there. And it's only been a year. Yeah, okay, whatever. But you're right. Either it was a very Merry Christmas or the eggnog was still cold. But my point of saying that is there was actually some positivity coming around. And that was certainly refreshing. But as the Patriots turn and try to build off of an effort that certainly did have good things against the Buffalo Bills, especially during that first half, there were a lot of things that you can look at and go, oh, we like to build on this and maybe, God forbid, end the season on a high note and actually represent well in front of our fans in Foxborough, because you'll see them for the final two games. Then we get this story that comes out from Mass Live, defensive end Keon White, saying, quote, I'm going to try to get through these next two games and then figure it out after that and see where the cards may lie for my future. When asked what exactly he meant by where his cards may lie, White hinted at frustration with his lack of production this season, saying, quote, just in general, in terms of everything, I mean, anything is possible. It's the NFL. Anything can happen year to year. It's a production-based business. It is what it is. You just figure out where you go. He said, I feel like I'm not playing good run defense. It's a multitude of reasons why. And this is the line that jumped out to me. It's an internal thing we need to figure out. That changed just as I was reading quote for quote. All right, he seemed to be upset with himself. Then you hear him say, it's an internal thing we need to figure out. And the natural question that arises for me, Tom, is, well, who the hell is we in this situation?
So I think he's talking about the unit. I think that he is the type of guy that he's not going to be out here sending messages to the media to be like, I think DeMarcus Covington should be fired. Like, I just don't think that that's how Keon White operates.
Okay.
I think when he says we need to figure these things out, it's an internal thing. It's him saying us in this room need to play better football.
Right.
So I of the belief and see it and hear it that these players like this coaching staff and want to play for this coaching staff.
Yeah.
Does that mean that I think that this coaching staff should be identical next season? Absolutely not. And I think DeMarcus Covington is the big swing that you take shortly after the season ends to say, we screwed up. This guy wasn't ready. He was like fifth on the defensive coach hierarchy last season.
Yeah.
And now he's running the show and Gerard is playing the CEO coach role. I think that they need to bring someone in that can either A, run a defense by themselves and has shown that they could do that for many years in the NFL, or B, have Gerard actually step up and really take control of that defense. And if they're going to keep DeMarcus Covington, that needs to happen. And do we know that Gerard can be that guy? We don't really know, right? Because he's been the linebackers coach and Steve Belichick was sort of the, you know, number two guy that ran the defense last season. Belichick is number one. We all know that.
Right.
So there's still some stuff to figure out on the coach's side. But as far as Keon's comments go, I don't think that's him calling out the coaching staff. I really don't.
So I want to follow up on that, Tom, because this article and just the comments that came from him are super interesting. And Dan, you pointed out, like, it sounded first like he's just talking about himself, and then it veers off from that. So just in reading it, he goes, I don't think it's just one thing. I think it's a lot of things. First and foremost, it's me. I need to improve me and be on the same page with what the coaches want. But this part also stood out. But I think it's a lot of other things as well. Without going too much into details, that's how I feel. What do you think he's guarding right now as it's related to what he's talking about, as it's related to the defense?
So he's kind of a guarded guy. Like, Keon White is not the type of guy that's revealing state secrets often, right? So to say I don't want to go too much into detail, I think that's just his way of keeping things in house.
But what, like, I think that's what I'm just asking you is, like, is it theorized? Is it the players? But you don't think it's the coaching staff. You think it's more the rest of the guys?
I think it's his way of saying we all need to play better.
Yeah.
And what that means, I mean, we could spend the next 4 hours talking about how the defense has looked. It's looked bad.
Yeah.
They haven't looked good against the run. In the short passing game is a mess. The linebackers that were good last season are bad now. The secondary outside of Gonzalez has looked bad. John Jones looks shot, personally. So there's a lot there.
Yeah.
And Keon White hasn't looked good since week two. So there's a lot of things in the mix. And so for him to just start listing things off, the guy is a football savant. I'm sure he could have extended his media availability 40 minutes and told us everything that's going wrong. That's why Belichick liked the guy so much. He's a smart player,
yeah,
loves football, but he's not going to be that guy. That's just not who he is. Even as he develops into being like the face of the defense, if he does become that guy over the next few years, he's never going to be that guy.
Four sacks in the first two games for the Patriots, then just one in his most recent 13, and he hasn't recorded a quarterback hit in his last four games with just three solo tackles during that span.
It's crazy.
Yeah, the fall off is dramatic, and while you can certainly speak to his demeanor more than I can, just covering this team at much more of an intimate level, I read a comment like that, and I look at the year-to-year regression that's happened, as you kind of pointed out, almost across the board. You haven't had a ton of turnover from a personnel perspective year over year. Not a ton, but you've seen almost to a man regression position to position to position. That, to me, speaks to scheming. That speaks to the way that these players are being deployed and the fact that when you did go from the Belichick to Gerard kind of trio of overseeing the way that the defense was being deployed to now where you are with DeMarcus Covington and kind of Mayo, you know, partially overseeing what's happening. When you see that kind of regression, that jumps out to me as a scheming issue, which is the reason why I took those comments differently than you did and did wonder if he was kind of starting to be a bit more verbal about this situation than we realize. As, again, week after week, day after day on this show, we have the conversation, well, who's safe? Who's not safe? Who has earned the ability to try to continue on this roller coaster as you try to be the next Detroit Lions? And I read a comment like that as the guy that seems to be in the crosshairs on the coaching staff right now is DeMarcus Covington, and it just makes me wonder. It makes me wonder how the players feel about the fact that their defense has regressed as a unit this year.
I'm sure they totally understand that Belichick's aren't here. Belichick's plural are not here running the defense anymore. And that Covington has stepped in. And really, when you look at the team across the board, the big difference, everyone is kind of the same. They kind of ran it back. They won four games and they're like, let's run it back.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Right? They did that. The big difference from last year to this year is at quarterback. It's no longer Mac Jones / Bailey Zappi. It is Drake May, and he's awesome. So you have a team that stunk last year with all
these
players.
Thank you for the positivity, by the way. Thank you.
And now
real dark in here.
And now they all come back, and the guy at the most important position is upgraded, and the team is actually kind of worse.
Right.
So now you start looking for, okay, why is that the case? When the most important position upgraded and everyone else is the same, why is it worse? And I'm with you. I think it's scheme. I think that when you have a guy running a defense that has never ran a defense on that level before, working with all these guys that were used to it a certain way, and now it's not that way anymore.
Right.
That's what I look to, and that's where I say, okay, Gerard, you need to step in and retake the reins here or get someone in here that can kind of refocus this defense. Because last year, they were a top half NFL defense. I think that their numbers were slightly overrated given that they played a lot of bad quarterbacks last year. But look, you can only play the games that are on your schedule. With that said, they need to get someone that can run the defense in the building and have them looking the way that they were in years past.
Yeah, and I was actually thinking about last year, too. I mean, Christian Gonzalez, he showed it in the four games he played, but he only played four games. So you had to deal with the season without this star rookie. And as we've already kind of hit on, you look at the bright spots for this year, he's one of those guys
totally. This
season alongside Drake May. It's like, okay, these are the franchise pillars. The question I had for you, Tom, just because you're there all the time, you do think about this team, and to the point of injuries, Matthew Judon was a part of this team last year, but he was hurt for a significant portion of the year. And obviously, one of the toughest things that they've had to deal with this year is what's happened with Christian Barmore. Like, how much slack does does DeMarcus Covington get for, okay, one of the key guys is out and he was traded right at the beginning of the season. And then this other guy who was supposed to be like a key cog in the defense had one of the more unfortunate, you know, types of injuries that you could have.
Yeah, I think it's a great point, and I don't think it's brought up enough. Do I think it's enough slack where he should be back? I don't. But, yeah, I mean, and Juwan Bentley went down.
Yeah.
You were missing Peppers most of the season. And, look, I'm not excusing anything having to do with Peppers. Like, it just is what it is. He wasn't there. So they were without some key pieces for most of the year. Duggar has been banged up. Whether Duggar has enough left in the tank to be that type of player that he's been in the past – we'll see next year because he's going to be back. So I do think that Covington probably does deserve a little more slack than he has been getting. With that said, it's not enough rope where he should have the job again next year, in my opinion.
617-779-7937 if you want to join the Patriots conversation, one of which is unfolding in the Twitch chat right now. Please, the quote is, please don't ever bring up Mac Jones or Bailey Zappe.
Caught my eye too.
Again, hey, I think to properly contextualize it and not to put words in your mouth, but you bring up those two fine individuals to then say, but at least we have Drake May.
Correct, yeah.
At least look at where we've gone. I know there's regression almost everywhere else.
That was the point.
Yes, but look, we have the golden child here. Yeah,
right.
And so I think it's, though those names are kind of mentioned like in hushed tones right now, like you really don't want to say them out loud, like to add those names and then properly contextualize it, but with look who is leading the offense for years and years to come. I think that's okay. If you just bring it up and go, wow, remember the great days we had with Mac and Bailey in the quarterback room? That's a punishable offense.
Yeah, and that would also be a fabrication because it wasn't. They weren't good. Drake May's awesome.
Yeah.
And if you're a Patriots fan and you're looking for something to be positive about moving forward, just know that you have the quarterback. And
right.
That is the hardest thing to get in the NFL. And I'm not breaking any news by saying that. I think people in New England maybe take that for granted without even realizing it because we had Tom Brady for 20 years here.
Yeah.
But they got Drake May 4 years after Brady played his last game in New England. Not a lot of franchises can say that. I mean, the 49ers went how many years after Steve Young's last game before they were a team that was in contention winning Super Bowls again? And I know that they ping-ponged between quarterbacks, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It takes time when your dynasty ends to get back in that dynasty-level style of play. So when you have the quarterback now, only a few years removed from that, it speeds up the timeline. And now you can say, okay, this guy's on a rookie deal. Now it's time to start being aggressive. Now Elliott Wolf, you can't have another offseason like you just had. You need to now take advantage of this guy's rookie contract, surround him with pieces, and really, really maximize this window the way that the Seahawks did with Russell Wilson out in Seattle. And there's a number of other examples that we can point to, too. Buffalo, before this mega deal with Josh Allen, they realized they had a guy and spent around him right before his rookie deal ended. That's what they need to do. So I put so much on Elliott Wolf's plate here for this offseason.
Yeah.
And the Crafts. The Crafts need to be okay with going out and greenlighting Wolf to spend the money because they need to make sure that they are not wasting these years with Drake May.
Are you team Tommy Curran, which is team at a football czar somewhere in the organization?
I did not know that was his take, but I co-signed the take. I'm pro Tom E. Curran in all scenarios.
Sure, absolutely.
So, yeah, but that's they need smart, experienced football dudes around that program to help Gerard. If they're going to keep Gerard Mayo, which it certainly seems like they're going to.
Right.
Surround him with as many guys like that as they can. It seems like Ben McAdoo is like that guy for Alex Van Pelt right now. And I don't know. I mean, I think
to properly contextualize it, by the way, and Joe can tell me if I'm wrong, but this kind of came up in our conversation with him on the show yesterday. It's a layer in between the Crafts and where Elliott Wolf sits right now.
Okay.
It's kind
of... So you're talking about someone that can help more on the team-building side than the coaching side.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Basically, I think his, and I'm just kind of like secondarily quoting him and what he thinks would be helpful.
Like a team president, quote unquote.
Type. Yeah, it's kind of like to distill what the Crafts want for their football team into football language and then kind of trigger the execution of whatever they want, to happen.
And what we were saying yesterday is that we didn't see how that could work within the current structure of having hired Elliott Wolf first.
Yeah.
Because then you'd have somebody really usurping what his duties are.
No, and this goes back to a larger conversation about how the Crafts kind of handled the last offseason in general. I mean, they kind of dragged their feet with the mutual parting of ways, in quotes, with the Belichick thing. Like that, if people don't remember, that took like 2 weeks longer than it probably should have for the coaching cycle. Yeah. And I understand that you need to treat Belichick differently than if you're just firing Steve Wilkes out in Arizona after a year.
Yeah.
Right? Like
yeah.
You can't just fire Belichick on Black Monday. But they did kind of last a few extra days, right? So you're starting behind the eight ball a little bit there. And then there were these periods of time throughout the spring where no one really knew who was in charge of the draft. And they were like, okay, we know Elliott Wolf is there and he's at the combine and he's talking on behalf of the organization, but he doesn't have the title. How much is Matt Groh in the mix? And then after the draft, that's when they were like, okay, this is your title and this is your title. Maybe they should have gone through a real coaching search that also coincided with a real general manager search and built from the ground up there. But they already had their coach in waiting, right? So they couldn't go out and pair him with their next GM because they couldn't do that hire tandem because they already had the guy, right? So they were like, okay, well, we got to kind of figure it out with these guys we have in the building. And that's kind of why we are where we are.
Right. And I think that's why Joe and I both landed on we don't think the football czar, though it works in theory, you'd have to be very, very selective about who you would go for and what capabilities they would have versus not have, because I would struggle to think that there would be somebody that would come in and take that job without the ability to hire and fire. Like if you identify whoever your czar is going to be, and I'm just using his term directly, and you say, yes, you're overseeing our football personnel decisions and overseeing our draft strategy and our free agent strategy and who we're trading for and how we use our draft picks and whether we make the second overall pick with Travis Hunter or whether we trade it or whatever else. And you say all that, but you also can't fire Elliott Wolf. You can't fire Jerod Mayo. And we're going to consult you on the rest of the coaching staff, but we're not going to allow you to unilaterally hire or fire. Are you going to get somebody who's just going to sign up for that and say, I can do this, but I also can't, and I'm not necessarily in lockstep with my GM? Like, it's a great idea in theory, but if you're going to do that, just clean the whole damn thing out. Or fire, or maybe a little bit more simply, fire Elliott Wolf, hire somebody you actually trust to build a team, and then whatever you end up doing with the coaching staff, you figure out from there.
Yeah, and for the person that you were just describing that would be okay with coming in and not having higher firepower, if you have someone that is like willing to be in that role and not want to do those things, is that actually someone that you want in that role?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Like, are you a leader of this franchise,
right?
or are you just an advisor, just the consigliere that's whispering in the Crafts' ear?
Now,
because those are two very different things.
Two names, and I don't know anything, but
yeah,
these are just names I'm thinking about of guys that I know don't have jobs in the league right now that have had ties to this organization that have had success, albeit with Bill Belichick as the true head of the operation, Scott Pioli.
Yep.
And Thomas Dimitroff.
Yes.
Those are like two guys that I know Patriot fans would probably get excited about. I don't know anything. I don't know if they're in the mix for other stuff. I don't know what they're doing in their personal lives. I think Scott Pioli does some media.
Yeah, and I think Dimitroff might have interviewed with the Jets.
Okay, so
recently, I saw that report.
Pioli, last he was doing anything in the NFL was 2019. He was the assistant GM with the Falcons.
Like, oh, okay.
Which is where Dimitroff was, so maybe there was some crossover.
Yeah,
there.
I would push against wanting to do that just because, yes, it's a relic to the golden era of the past, but this is where I think this organization needs to start. Let's start to be more like forward thinking.
Yeah.
That was the past. It worked at that point. And not to mention that Pioli's had other stops before even the Falcons too. He was with the Chiefs for a while,
and right,
not a great run there, you know. So, but I it's a fascinating concept, the football czar thing, but I think what we'd all want is if somebody's going to be there, it has to be an organization in lockstep, which at times, especially recently, it seems to have not be that way.
No, because you removed the one guy that was essentially solely responsible for being in lockstep. Bill had to agree with Bill, who had to agree with Bill, and then all of a sudden it happened, and it went on the field, and for a while it was successful. But
a long while.
Yes, exactly, which is also important to remember. But we are up against a break. We'll take it here again, 617-779-7937, if you want to join us either via call or via text to join in on the Patriots conversation as they get ready to take on the Los Angeles Chargers, a team we will start to preview. And a game we'll start to preview coming up next. It's WEI Afternoons here on a Friday. Thanks for being with us. 617-779-7937. A shout out on the text line from the 774 for our good friend Christian Arcand, who, if you didn't hear on yesterday's show, had his nose broken by his son who headbutted him directly in the schnoz.
Amazing story. I saw that thread on Twitter. It was hilarious.
Yes.
I mean, it's obviously, I feel bad for the guy, but it is hilarious.
It's also a Christmas that they'll never forget, too. This is going to be brought up so many years in the future, too. You can almost like picture like Christian's speech at his son's wedding.
Right.
Talking about honestly, this moment.
I almost ran into Christian at dinner the other night, actually.
How literally did you almost run into him? Run into him like his son did?
hit him in the nose?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I was meeting up with some friends at Town Spa Pizza in Stoughton.
Yeah.
I had never had South Shore bar pie.
Okay.
Just had never had it. And some friends are in town that live elsewhere, and they're home for the holidays, so we went and grabbed food. That was like a good middle point, and apparently Christian was there like right within an hour of me being there.
Really?
We just missed each other. But great spot. Yeah. I had never had the little thin crust stuff.
Yeah.
Really good.
Okay.
Into it.
I'm into that. What was it?
Town Spa is a great one. Town Spa Pizza.
Yeah.
It's in Stoughton, right?
Stoughton, yeah.
Great pizza joint. It's great. Love
okay.
it.
Okay. See, this is good. I'm still in my first month here, so I'm taking
That's
notes
right.
of all this information.
How are you liking it?
It's been awesome. First of all, everybody here has been tremendous. Like it was a big transition to come out here, but I've always wanted to work here, so everybody's been awesome, and that goes to Stiz and Christian and Andy too, who are normally in this slot. But I'm living in Quincy. I will not go any more detailed than that, but that's been great too. So again, if you know anything in that area, let me know. Tweet, text, call. You can even call like when I'm back behind the glass in the new year. Call and say, I don't want to go on the show. I just want to tell Dan where to have dinner tonight.
Yeah, get this guy some rest.
I'll have a full conversation, and I appreciate every bit of information that I can get. But yeah, everything's been great. Everything's been awesome.
Awesome.
617-779-7937. Where should Dan eat for dinner tonight? or if you actually want to talk sports, we can do that too. We're going to transition over to the Red Sox to start hour number two, because more reports coming out about the state of Tristan Casas, and specifically what almost came to be between the Red Sox and the Seattle Mariners. This isn't the first time that these rumors have floated, but the extra detail that came out today from Mark Feinsand, I know it at least raised the eyebrow of Joe Weil, who does a lot of great work covering the Red Sox here on WEEI. So we'll talk about that. We also have plenty to get to in terms of previewing Patriots and Chargers, which again is tomorrow. So all of what you normally expect in terms of the EEI football Sunday pregame show is happening tomorrow. Same can be said for the Six Rings postgame show all tomorrow on the station before and after New England Patriots football. Okay, to the Sox we go to start hour number two here on WEEI Afternoons. All that and more coming up next.